and welcome to the Moonshine Jesus Show, which is brought to you, as always, by ProgressiveChristianity.org. Go check them out. Make sure you follow them on social media. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy, Mark Sandlin. How you doing today, Mark?
Doing great, Caleb. I'm ready for the show. How about you?
I'm ready. X-Men 97. And it's a relatively new release, so we do need to tell you that if you haven't seen it, that there will be some spoilers, but we're not too far into it. And let's be honest, this is a continuation of 76 episodes or something like that. Yeah. So we can't spoil it too much for you, but we will be talking about the episodes. But before we get there, we have to pour ourselves a drink. Do you have something today, Mark?
I do. I went online and looked one up. I'm doing my favorite character in the series so far, which we've not seen much from, but he always is. I tend to go back to him as Beast. And so it's lovely. It's the color of Beast. And it's two parts extra dry vermouth, one part tequila, one part triple sec, one part blue curacao, and then one part lemon. So it should, I'm guessing, be a very sharp tasting. And he's a sharp guy, so it kind of works.
He's a sharp guy. That's right.
So how about you, man?
So my favorite character has always been Wolverine, but I didn't do a Wolverine drink. I went with the Beast as well.
I figured you went with something blue.
I did. And so I've got, but it's made differently. So it's the Beast, but it is vodka, blue curacao, raspberry sours, peach schnapps, and lemonade. So
cheers, sir.
Beast to you. Oh, look, a little bit different color.
We did. It ended up different. Should be a good show.
Cheers. Yes. See you on the other side.
Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Won't you shine a light?
Thank you for joining us for our Geek Out segment. This is where Caleb and I let our geek flags fly. We like to kind of enjoy the show and talk about what's going on and our perspectives on it. We promise we won't take as much time doing this as we will in our next segment, where we're going to talk about the theological and political kind of things that we saw and what was happening and have a little discussion about that. But for those who aren't familiar with X-Men 97, it's a reboot, basically, or a remake. They're following up, as Caleb said, the events of X-Men, the animated series, which was from 1992 to 97, hence the 97. We're picking up in what was broadcast in 97. And I won't go into a lot of details about it, because either you saw the old series or you didn't, and you'll know what's going on. But basically, what is happening right now is that the X-Men, we pick up at the end of that, and the X-Men are facing dangerous new challenges, some old challenges, and they're doing it all following the loss of their leader, Professor Xavier. So it's interesting to be watching, and after all of these 25 some years, to have this come back around and pick up on the storyline where it left off. I'm curious, did you watch the original series? Were you a big fan? Did you like the original series? And then, based on all of that, if you have, how does this follow up compare to it, in your opinion?
So I did watch the original series. I was a big fan. I was a kid when it was on, and it came on at like 10 or 10:30 on Saturday morning. And so the nostalgia factor is very high for me on this one. This one was one of the more influential cartoons for me growing up, other than maybe like Batman, the animated series. I watched a lot of X-Men. I loved the X-Men. And so I would watch this on Saturdays, and then I would go roller skating. That was our tradition in my house. Yeah. Nice. So I watched a lot of X-Men. And so I missed it being on the air. I loved watching this, and I thought it was a faithful adaptation. I thought it was really cool to see a lot of the original voice actors come back. Some of them are no longer around. It has been.
It has been 25 some years.
As you mentioned, so they're not all still around. But I think one of the things that was really powerful about the show was that it was really well voice acted. So I thought it was great to have some great voice actors come back. And I thought it was fun to pick up where we left off, to get some more character development, mm-hmm. but also to get some of the fun aspects of the show back. Like I think the Mojo episode that was just like 15 minutes, that even though this is streaming, it's still kind of paced like a TV series. You know, you get kind of weird, mm-hmm. weird half episodes. They're not even broadcasting necessarily sequentially. And so it feels a little bit like a 90s TV show. And I liked mm-hmm. that for me. How about for you? What did you think? Did you watch it when it was on?
I actually only watched it in reruns mm-hmm. when my kids were growing up, you know, 10 years later ish, whenever the reruns were on, I don't remember. And I watched it kind of on and off. I was a fan of X-Men, and I don't know why this wasn't something that I watched a lot of, but I watched enough that I was familiar with the original series and some mm-hmm. of the storylines, particularly how it ended. And mm-hmm. I agree. I like what they've done with it. I do actually think the pacing is a little faster than back then, partly mm-hmm. because they don't have to make room for commercials so they can move on through it. I love the homages that they gave to the old show, where mm-hmm. they basically kept the theme music. They kept the look of it, although you know, animation has improved. So I actually love the balance that they have. The main characters look a lot like and are animated a lot like the original series. The background has much more depth and interest mm-hmm. going on there. And in the action sequences, I feel like they're much smoother now. And I love that. But I also love that sometimes when the dialogue is such that a character is reacting positively, negatively to another character, mm-hmm. rather than animating it, they just freeze cell like they would have in the original series, like just a frozen face in one position and not reacting. Yeah. Because the original series was notoriously low budget, and so they
used
as much time as they could by doing things like that.
Yeah.
I love that this new series, there were several times where we saw that happening, and it was just, I thought, a lot of fun. So I am not as familiar with the original series as you, but I'm really liking this. As a matter of fact, this is kind of making me want to go back and rewatch the whole original series to kind of get back into it and remember. But we'll see if I have time to do
that. What I've started doing. So I'm working my way through the original series, and I had actually started before this was announced. And so I thought, oh, this is cool. This is convenient timing. And so it's been fun to rewatch, and it holds up pretty well, you know, low budget and all, but it holds up pretty well for what this.
So bridging the gap between the two, in the ending of the original series, the bad guy, Henry Gyrich, almost kills Professor X. And he's whisked away. We open being told that it's interesting. They play it off like he's dead, but no one ever actually says he's dead. They just say we lost our leader or something like that. And so we do open with no Professor X. I'm curious what you thought about the feel of the X-Men without Professor X leading them.
Well, I thought it was really interesting to give this kind of a new flavor, to bring Magneto into the mix and to put him in charge of the X-Men. And so I thought that was a really interesting way to open this and to give it a different dynamic and to kind of signify that he's not there. I think Xavier will come back. I don't think Professor X is gone and we're not going to see him. I think that they'll bring him back. And that's also something that we've seen happen several times throughout this series. I think about all they've done with Jean Grey's character, you know, they told the Dark Phoenix narrative, and even in this new, in the original series. And then in this new iteration, we've even seen Jean, already, you know, having been replaced by a clone and come back and all of that. So I think we'll see Xavier back. And obviously, he's the one who kind of grounds the X-Men. And he is the leader who helps unite them and pull them together. I think it's working. I think it's working fine in this way. But I don't think we're going to have to live with this iteration of the X-Men like this for too long. I think he'll come back. How about you? What do you think?
Well, first of all, congratulations. You stole one of my make me look stupid questions.
Yes!
And you started to touch on one of my other questions.
Oh, man, I should have kept rambling and to see if I could hit it. Right.
I liked that we didn't have him, but it felt different to me. With that lack of leadership, and sort of the, uncertainty that we felt from the new leader, it gave it this kind of like the foundation was loose. And so it felt unsteady and uneven. And I kind of like that. I agree. My question was, will Professor X come back? And I agree. I think he is. I actually don't think we're going to see him until the last episode of this season. They already have season two basically in the books. So I think we're going to have him, but I think they're going to play this out a lot longer. It's too interesting and there's too much intrigue. It's like with Magneto and the dynamic that's going on there and the kind of, do I trust him? Do I not trust him? There's just enough going on there that I feel like they seem to be very good storytellers so far. If anything, they're too good of storytellers. They're telling too many stories all at once. And so, there's a lot going on if you actually are paying. There might be one or two overarching storylines, but, man, there are so many subplot storylines going on. It's crazy. But I do think they're good storytellers, and I think that they recognize what they have, and that we're probably going to see Magneto, or maybe not Magneto, I'm not sure, being the leader at least this entire season. That would be my guess anyway. We're going to see. So continue on this trail. Why do you think Professor X picked Magneto to lead the X-Men?
Well, I think in part it's because he holds out hope that Magneto is going to come over to his side of the mutant human debate. You know, that's one of the fun things about X-Men is that there's this kind of dichotomy drawn about, you know, how are you going to relate when you're a minority group? Are you going to try to make peace with the rest of the world, try to find a way to live harmoniously, or are you going to be at odds with that? Like, are you going to violently try to find your place in the world? And and Xavier is always striving to get Magneto to come over to his side, to build peace, to work on dialogue and diplomacy and all of these things. And I think he ultimately holds out hope for his friend that he's going to come back to his side of things. And so I think that's part of it. I also think that he thought it would be a challenge for the X-Men to have to learn to take leadership from Magneto. So I do think it was genuinely Xavier who gave it, who gave Magneto, because it could have been manipulated or something. I think it was genuinely Xavier, and I think he held out hope for his friend, and he thought it'd be good for the X-Men. What do you think? Why do you think he did it?
I pretty much agree almost completely, except for the reason he thought it was going to be good for the X-Men.
Yeah.
Like I said, for me, particularly the first episode, as we're learning that they're still together, but there's no like real solid leader, and it felt unstable. I think he recognized that was probably going to be the reality, and that I think why he believed it would be good is because he's always ever so hopeful that, you know, that everything's going to work out. And the same thing with his good friend Magneto. I think he brought him in. It's clear from the dialogue that he got Magneto to agree that he would be helpful and that he would try to unite groups and not stand over and against the humans. And I think that he knew that if he was leading them under that promise, that he wouldn't be out there being a problem for the X-Men who are currently unstable as they try to figure out what leadership and how they're going to function, all of that. So I think I'm kind of the same, but I think it was helpful for me. I saw it being helpful in a different way, but still him being Professor X, he's trying to figure out how to help his kids as best as he can, because that's what he does. So
that's what he does, doesn't he?
We got time for probably one last question. And this one, I'm curious to see where you go with, because there's a lot of history ultimately. Even all the way back to the comics from sometime in the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
Do you think that the themes that we've seen so far, that some of them are too adult for young kids? I mean, are they primarily marketing to people like you who grew up in the 90s and watched this, or are they trying to get? Do they handle them in a way that it's okay, that kids would be good with? I mean, there's love triangles, there's pregnancy, there's switching. I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think this has always been a question about X-Men, even in the 90s, that they kind of dealt with adult themes in a way that people always kind of wondered about. And I think part of it was that in the 90s, you could get away with a lot of that in a little bit different way. I think they are primarily marketing to folks my age who are and capitalizing on the nostalgia factor, because let's face it, that's what we're doing right now in TV and movies and everywhere.
In entertainment, that's what they're doing. Yeah.
That's what we're doing, is we're trying to capitalize on nostalgia. I think I am the primary target, but I think that it is done in a way where things kind of go over kids' heads in the way that it always kind of was, that you tell a story, you tell two different stories at the same time. You tell the story that the kids can kind of comprehend, and then you're speaking on a different level to the older audience. And that's one of the things that I always have kind of liked about this series, is that it started what, in 92 and ended in 97. And so that's a course of 5 years. And so, I started watching it when I was 7 and stopped when I was 12. And so I understood it at a different level whenever I was watching it. So I think it's fine. It's definitely speaking to different levels, to different ages. What do you think?
I agree. It's always been sort of adultish in theme on purpose. Matter of fact, I think it's one of the reasons why I am not as a big X-Men. I like the X-Men a lot. I love the characters. Yeah. I love the themes that they address. I absolutely love that. But the way they go about it feels very soap opera-ish to me, and I have never been able to get into that kind of storytelling. It just doesn't connect with me. I get that it connects with a lot of people. And it's actually the writer that made the comics and be something that people cared about is a guy named Chris Claremont. And he took it over when it was kind of faltering and intentionally put in this sort of soap opera storytelling kind of way of approaching, and it's always kept that that kind of vibe, and I think that's why it's never been like the movies stray away from it, and I think unfortunately for people like me, that's why they don't work, because the X-Men works because it has that soap opera ish but also it's a little preachy and it's unapologetic about it. And I think that's probably why the movies didn't work, but it's also why I kind of like the movies, because it's straight away from that. But anyway, we could drone on and on about our geekiness on all of this, but we need to take a quick break here and come back and talk about some. Like I said, they really address important themes. So we're going to come back on the other side and discuss some of that. We'll catch you after the break.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show. We have let our geek flags fly a little bit, and now we are moving into the Theopolitico segment, where we are talking about theology and politics of X-Men 97. So, Mark, X-Men is a little more political than others, I think. And so in X-Men, we intentionally see a minority group banding together to try to change people's opinions and to try and fight for rights. Could you draw some parallels there with some things that are happening in the U.S. right now? Thank God we don't have anything like that. I'm glad. I was really worried that minorities were still oppressed in the U.S. And
there, obviously there's so many connections, but the two largest ones, and with good reason, the showrunner, Bo DeMeo, is a gay black man who was part of an adopted family. So there's a lot of his experience in history that plays so perfectly into the themes that Chris Claremont wrote into the original comics. And I mean, the obvious ones are particularly Black Lives Matter and the movement and what they've been trying to do to change minds and get people to understand what's really going on and to see the systemic injustice that's there. But also in the LGBTQIA world, I love that we are hearing things that are more clearly about that community than we have in the past from X-Men. Although the path of both echoes each other. We had quotes in this one that's like, I didn't ask for this. I was born this way. A family that accepts you sounds nice. Like it's very clear that that Bo DeMeo, who is no longer the showrunner, but was for the first season and ultimately the second because it's all but finished, is making it clear that part of what we're doing is making social and political commentary on the way that those specific communities get marginalized and hurt. And it shows them in terms of the metaphor of stepping up for themselves and bringing people on board and showing why they shouldn't be marginalized and how important both communities really are. Those are two of the bigger ones that I see. How about yourself, man?
Yeah, the LGBTQ plus youth was really the one that stood out in my mind as well for the reasons you're talking about. But also, I think specifically because of the whole notion of getting kicked out of homes and that 40% of homeless youth in the United States are LGBTQ plus identifying because their families haven't accepted them. I think this whole notion of struggling with identity and wanting to fit in or to be normal is something that I have heard a lot from folks in the LGBTQ plus community who have gotten kicked out of their homes and are trying to find community and chosen family and identity. I also thought a lot about undocumented folks who have to leave their home searching for a place of community and of refuge. And so I think we certainly see groups like that represented in X-Men. I thought one thing that was really interesting about this new series as well is that we saw Morph kind of presented as more of a non-binary character than he was the first go-round.
He actually is intentionally so. I saw that Bo DeMeo said clearly that that was very intentional. While it matches up better with what his powers are, it was also an intentional statement.
Yeah, and because for those who aren't familiar, he often took on kind of male form in the original series. And in this, he's more of a non-binary type character without male physical features. And I thought that that was really interesting and a smart way to play that and to help speak to that issue. You know, one of the things that we've already mentioned, Mark, is that Professor X isn't there and Magneto is leading the X-Men and maybe has had a bit of a change of heart. So I'm curious, Mark, one, do you think that will stick? Do you think Magneto will continue to have a change of heart? And one way or the other, what do you think that says about possibilities for redemption?
Oh god, you really set me up for what my real answer is. I don't think it's going to stick. There are just folks that have been so indoctrinated that short of an unusual relationship, which I guess there's still a potential that Professor X comes back and his closeness to Magneto over life and could be that unusual connection and relationship changes them. But there's so much indoctrination that say, hey, look at that. See, that's why you need to do X. Look at that. Mm-hmm. And I think as he tries to do this, we've already seen actually a couple of times where he gets frustrated with trying to bridge the gap. And I think we're going to see him say, listen, I tried. And look at those humans. Look how they, like, it's still speaking to the great message that this and theme that, but I think he's going to say, look at those humans. No matter how many times you try to show them, you try to get them to get along, you try to get them to be accepting, they hurt you and they come at you, which, one, good storytelling. I'm glad that that's probably what's going to happen, in my opinion. But no, I think he won't ultimately be redeemed, but he might be like not quite as horrible. And that's sort of the path of redemption. It's rare that you have a light switch moment in life. Life's not quite like that. It tends to be a journey. And so maybe we'll see him, while he made this light switch kind of change almost, I think that they're going to back up and have him falter, take many steps back, but not quite be where he was. And I think that's just more realistic. And I do think that if there's a real change, it's going to come through relationship. And in my observation, you know, I have had some incredibly great arguments to try to convince people they shouldn't be marginalizing other people that never, ever worked.
Yeah.
But then they have a relationship that is counter to what they've been conditioned to believe. Mm-hmm. And that almost always is what actually changes their minds and their perspective. So anyway, I rambled on probably way more than you were expecting me to on that question, but I'm curious what your opinion about that is.
I love it. Yeah. I don't think he's ultimately going to come to Xavier's side. I think if he does, it has to be at the end of the series, because otherwise they lose their best antagonist and they have to write him as a good guy. But I think one of the things that's really interesting about Magneto is that he experienced this childhood trauma of being in concentration camps.
Yeah.
And that is something like he saw the worst of humanity, and that has influenced how he perceives humanity.
He had that great line.
Yeah.
We were targeted because we called God by another name.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
What a statement of humanity, right?
Right. Yes. And so I think it's, when you've seen the evils of humanity, it's hard to trust in the goodness of humanity as well. And so that trauma, I think, makes him an interesting character. It also makes him sympathetic, you know, like he was a Jew in a concentration camp, and he now is persecuted because he's a mutant. And so I think that makes sense. So I think that redemption is an interesting thing, and it's not clean, and people don't fall into neat categories of good and bad. And so I think you're right that maybe he experiences pieces of redemption along the way, but ultimately he chooses how he's going to interact with the world. So one of the things that Cyclops says, quoting Professor X, whenever Magneto takes over.
This is the quote about truth?
It's about trust.
Trust, you know, trust.
Yeah, yeah.
I know where you're going. Because it was one of those lines that when it said, you just go, oh.
The theologian in you writes it down, right? And so he says, trust happens when action meets words, right?
Yeah.
And so that got me thinking, okay, Mark, what could Christians in the United States do to earn back some trust? Because I think one problem that Christians have is that You know, Christians might be a little hypocritical at times, and I know it's a
shock. Wait. You get to believe that and still be a minister? I don't know.
I know. Tell me, what can Christians do to earn back some trust?
I mean, you've already said it, man. Basically, back up what you say you believe with your actions. Mm-hmm. And we are horrible at that, particularly when it comes to anyone who we don't identify as the same as me. If anything, one of the largest parts of Jesus's teachings was the importance of accepting people, particularly those who you might not see the same as yourself. Particularly those who are marginalized, particularly those that the system is stacked against. Christians are usually, the majority have become, unfortunately, very good at kind of saying that God is love and that we are to love all people. And then they justify horrific, unloving actions by saying, well, it's truly love to let you know what a horrible person you are. So that would be a great place to start. And one of the ways we get rid of that is they believe that that is the case because they're saving you from hell.
Yeah.
And so I actually think one of the things that we need to be much better at is showing that hell isn't actually, in terms of the way that we think of it and conceptualize mm-hmm. it today, isn't a biblical reality. Because right. you remove that, and that argument of by judging you, I'm being loving because I'm saving you from hell. We remove uh-huh. that as a real possibility. And then you've got to actually start thinking about what you're actually doing and saying. I'm sorry. I got on a little bit of a soapbox there.
A soapbox we all need to be on because, absolutely. Oh my God, the amount of the hypocrisy and saying, oh, I love you. So you're awful and change everything about yourself so that you don't go to hell. That's awful. So I think that an easy thing Christians could do is like to be vocal about accepting LGBTQ plus people and climate change. Yeah. We see over and over again that the reason people leave churches is because of perceived stances on mm-hmm. Sexual orientation and gender identity and climate change. Mm-hmm. And so like if churches and Christians like preached love and then practiced it for mm-hmm. LGBTQ plus folks and then like preached about taking care of the earth and then did it. I think mm-hmm. that those are two ways that people could demonstrate that they are actually practicing the beliefs that they say they care about. So I have like a million more theological and political questions.
No doubt. It's chock full of them.
It is. But, I can't ask all of these questions because if I do, I'll steal your remaining make me look stupid questions. And
I got three of them. I feel comfortable. I've got three still. So I was watching the clock click tick down. I was like, finally, I'm going to get there without losing them all.
Yes. Okay. So we'll wrap this segment up and we'll come back our make me look stupid segment.
Welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show. You're joining us for our Make Me Look Stupid segment. It's a segment where we sometimes ask a question to try to make our co-host look stupid. We sometimes ask a question because we already feel stupid and want an answer. And sometimes we ask a question to force them to make a prediction so that they'll look stupid in the future. Caleb, I have three remaining questions out of the five that I started with. Well done, sir. You had been sort of slack this season. You've come back with fire in your belly, man. You've done it right. So I have three. I'm going to give you a choice, and I'm even going to let you know at least part of the focus of the question.
Yeah.
Do you want a question about Storm, about Rogue, or about Morph?
You know, we were already talking about Morph. Let's talk about Morph.
Okay, so Morph said that he could show the X-Men where Mr. Sinister was. And in the comic, he would have known that in the comic because Sinister found him while he was very, very badly hurt, nursed him back to health, and he brainwashed him. So assuming that that's how he knows in the animated series, particularly since they've made such a change to make him sort of a non-binary character, do you think they would risk having him not remain loyal to the X-Men? Because in the comics, he kind of floated back and forth. He was never complete. But they've made this big change to try to make a real statement, an important statement the world needs to hear right now, and have him represent a massively underrepresented segment of society.
Yes.
Do you think, based on their storyline and based on what they've done with the character, that they would risk having him maybe join Mr. Sinister again or float back and forth or question the X-Men? I'm glad that's the one you picked because that's the one I most wanted the answer from. No joke. I really did.
Good. So in the animated series, Morph is hurt in one of the first episodes and you think he's gone. And then Mr. Sinister finds him, you know, manipulates him. And throughout
they repeat the comic book story.
They do. And so we've seen throughout most of the animated series, Morph kind of going back and forth, and actually for the majority of it, him being under Mr. Sinister's influence. And so then he finally comes back to the X-Men. So whenever I heard that line, I thought, of course he knows where Mr. Sinister is because he spent so much time with Mr. Sinister. And so I think he'll show them. I think we might see some manipulation, and there might be a short period of time where, you know, Mr. Sinister uses some kind of mind control to get him back.
Right.
I think ultimately he's going to be loyal to the X-Men.
It goes back to what we talk about in terms of indoctrination. Yeah. I mean, he brainwashed him, and it's very hard to break through free of that. Like we said, Magneto, in his own way, was brainwashed against humanity. Xavier's trying to win him back, and it can be very hard to, you might make a good choice and then kind of get drift back. So I like that argument. I do think that he's going to, but I also think, I wish you wouldn't have made him so important in the way that you reimagined him to represent an underrepresented group of folks, but then make him this shifty. So I want him not to. I really am hoping they don't, because too much too many people are willing to think that non-binary folks aren't trustworthy and they're odd and you can't, you know, they don't think straight. They don't whatever.
Yeah.
I really hope they don't have this character kind of bounce back and forth. I'm afraid that they're going to.
Yeah. I think the one saving grace in that is that it's pretty clear that it wasn't, he didn't do it consciously. It wasn't him making the decisions. Right.
And, I mean, yes, it's clear to those who are willing to actually listen, but the people who are wanting to judge non-binary folks are going to see it as they, you.
Fair enough. I do know what you mean. What's that you like to say, Mark? You can't rationalize people
you can't change people's minds through rational thought who didn't arrive at their conclusion through something other than rational thought.
Yeah, that's right.
You just can't.
Thank you. Thanks for helping me with your quote there, Mark. I
butchered my quote too. That's the thought behind it. But I said it a little bit different. The one that went kind of viral, when I said it differently, I don't remember exactly. But anyway, so what is your make me look stupid question?
Okay, I'm curious about, I want to ask you about Jean, because I just found this fascinating. I didn't see this like body swap thing coming.
By the way, that was the question that you touched on. You didn't quite get what my question was, and it started to sound like maybe you're going to ask me the exact question I was going to ask you. We'll see.
I don't think so, because I'm gonna pivot a little bit, because I want to ask you something that the clone Jean says.
Yeah. Okay.
So when she's pregnant, she says that she wants her child to be born normal, and I'm curious, what does that say about hope for marginalized communities?
It's actually, very, very depressing, isn't it? The fact that a person who's been marginalized her whole life because of who she was born as is frightened for her unborn child because of the way that he's going to be treated. She says, how do I tell him he's different? That the world will remind him of that every day, that he must always be careful, always be on guard. And I think that makes a horrible statement of humanity and what we have done.
Yeah.
It speaks to the Black community. It speaks to LGBTQIA plus community, parents fear for their child, even an unborn child, because they know what they're going to be born into, and they know how the world is going to treat them, to the point that they're almost willing to wish that they could somehow take that away from them. I mean, it was a very emotional thing that she was saying. I don't think she actually ever wouldn't want him to be exactly who he was supposed to be, but to have that space where she emotionally realizes, man, I almost wish that I could make you quote normal. I mean, the idea of normal is the biggest joke in the world. Mm-hmm. I've never met a normal person. It's sort of one of the key pieces of being human. ain't none of us normal. But it's a sad statement on humanity and what we've driven people to. That's what I heard when she said it.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard a lot of LGBT identifying parents who have had to really struggle in their lives and relationships, especially perhaps the time periods and places where they have grown up, and I have heard expressed a similar hope about for their kids, like, well, I'm glad they're growing up in a supportive space, and we're trying to be as supportive as we can, but gee, I hope they don't have to go through this in the same way that I do. And I think it's really a wish about, like you said, not wanting your kids to suffer.
As a parent of a child that identifies in that community, I can tell you that my oldest son, who's trans, is one of the strongest people I know. He is just, and he is so certain of himself, and he doesn't let the fact that other people are going to be mean stop him from doing anything. As a matter of fact, he's overly kind about it. He helps educate me, doesn't take anything personal.
Yeah.
And so knowing that about him, I still, as a parent, there's moments where I dread and I get scared as the nation makes choices of what's going to happen to my kid. And so I really get how difficult as a parent that is. And in some ways it's unfair to my kid. Like, Caden is such a strong person and I should trust that. But there's the emotional part of you that feels as a parent that no matter how old you or they are, that because he's a grown adult.
Yeah.
That you feel like, I still want to protect them. I want to know. Yeah. I want to make sure they're okay. I want to change the world in a way that makes it the best world for them I can do. It's tough, man. When she gave that little quote, I was like,
wow.
So anyway, we have gone on and on about this, and we encourage people, you really should be watching this.
Watch
it's done very well. It's interesting. It's engaging. The story telling is fantastic. They're talking about incredible things that need to be addressed. But We only have so much time for each of our podcasts, and that time is up. We need to decide what we're going to do for our next show, but we also need to tell you we're going to skip yet one more week. I'm taking some time off next week, and so we've decided to, and there's not a lot of new sci-fi that's as engaging as it could be for next week. So we're going to take a week off and come back, and we have something pretty decent to come back with, right?
That's right. Rebel Moon 2.
Yeah, right? I mean, we talked about the original one, and you and I both were sort of hit and miss with how it came out. I have heard talk that part two is better. It's called Rebel Moon Part Two, The Scavenger, the Scargiver. And so the generic description is just that the rebels gear up for battle against the ruthless forces of the mother world as unbreakable bonds are forged and heroes emerge and legends are made. So I hope it can live up to that description.
Legends are made, Mark. What can go wrong with that? Let's
Rebel Moon. Hopefully it can hold up to that bold statement of what the second part is about. We shall see. I will admit I have some doubts, but we're going
a little skeptical.
A little bit.
We have both seen part one, so.
Absolutely. It's skeptical in a well-informed way. So anyway, we need to wrap the show up. We are so thankful for all of you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching live, those who have been tuning in to the live broadcast. I will say it every time. We get to do this because you care, that you are engaged, and that you support what we're doing here. And so thank you so much. And with that said, we will see you the next time on The Moonshine Jesus Show.
Moonshine Jesus, go by the sky. Moonshine Jesus.